Welcome to the Grape Nation on the road on the Heritage Radio Network. We are in Norwalk, Connecticut, as part of Norwalk Now Crush Week, and we are at Washington Prime in Sono in Norwalk. Our guest is Doug Paulding. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Doug.
Thank you.
Doug, we've been sitting around talking to a lot of people, and you are truly one of the wine guys in the group. You've been on the wine scene in Southern Connecticut and in general, surrounding New York area for years. Give us a brief background on your journey in life and wine that got you to the present. Keep it sort of in the context of hospitality, wine, and all of that, not stump grinding and other things like that.
I bluffed my way into a restaurant job on Nantucket when I was 19 years old.
Good place to bluff it.
Yeah, and ended up in a very nice French restaurant called Le Languedoc without knowing anything.
And still there or no?
It is.
Is it?
Different owners, but
cool.
Yeah, it's still there. And ended up living in a house with a girlfriend who was a few years older, who had been to France several times and knew wines and knew cognacs and things, and also six other guys who were chefs or waiters.
So that environment was heavily.
So it was just heavily a big restaurant thing. I came out.
And this girlfriend, whatever she did, you just followed her around, right? That type of thing.
She followed me.
Okay,
then,
go ahead.
But okay.
All right.
She came to Nantucket after me, but
okay.
That's fine. So I was working in this restaurant, and every night there was wine left on a table, and you know everyone had their own wine experience, their own restaurant experience, and they'd
right.
bring things home, and we'd have like a communal thing at night.
Fun.
And just taste things.
And you were loving it.
Loving it.
You love the wines,
whole
the diversity.
Yeah, I was used to Gallon Gallo.
So what happens after that? Right.
So I started developing a wine cellar in college and then after college.
That inspired you to...
Not really a cellar. I mean, like...
But to keep a few bottles aside and have them.
So I wasn't buying for the night.
I mean, most of your friends probably weren't doing that, other than the guys in the house.
Right.
Yeah.
I told my son he needed a few bottles. He's 32 now. And I told him he needs a few bottles of cognac on his... dresser, and
right.
And I said I was a Stone Brook college student, and I had six on my dresser at the time. And he said, if you had six on your dresser, you weren't Stone Brook, but
right.
I was.
So go back to that for a minute.
It was just a priority.
When you started deciding to, you know, keep a few bottles, what was interesting and important to you then? Was it Bordeaux? Was it Burgundy? Was it American?
Not American at all.
Okay.
This was 1976,
okay.
77, and the judgment of Paris hadn't was just
happened
happening
yet
at the time.
Right.
The story hadn't gotten out, and California wines I didn't find to be very interesting. But that, of course, that changed.
So mostly French?
Mostly French.
All right. So then what happens from there?
So then I
you have this interest in liking.
Graduated college. I kept learning about wines, reading things, reading Eric Asimov in the paper eventually. And reading books about wine. And then I started playing softball with this guy who was a upper-level person in the Sommelier Society of America local chapter, Lawrence LaManna.
Right.
Played softball with him.
Okay.
Like for years. And everybody else would get done playing, and they'd talk about the game, or they'd talk about beer.
You were all wine.
And we're talking about the wines of the week and stuff. And he said, you got to take my course someday. It was a 20-week course. I think it was Thursday mornings in Westchester. And they would pick a region of the world, talk about it. Or, earlier on it was about making wine, then it was the different parts of wine, and then it was a region. And then we'd talk about it, and then for the last half of the class, they would open wines, and we would talk about them as a group. It was maybe 30 people in the group, and that really bumped me to a new level. And then I... got a very, very part-time job at a restaurant in Killington where I have...
Why? Because you skied?
I skied there.
You were
the
there?
Time.
Okay.
I coach skiing up there.
Are there, and I don't mean to be facetious, but are there good restaurants in Killington
yeah.
that have some good wine service?
Yeah.
I'm sure you found it.
Great.
Hemingway's.
No longer in business.
Okay.
But Ted and Linda Fondoulis are awesome. But they're
And cared
moved,
about wine?
Moved on to other things, yeah.
Okay.
So I told them that I didn't want to do setup, I didn't want to do takedown, but if they got slammed in the middle of a service and they needed an extra hand pouring or helping, there I am. And I'd be at a party, my phone would ring or a text, and I go, gotta go.
Right.
And I'd be back in, an hour and a half or whatever it was.
So you did that.
So I did that, and Ted was affiliated. Actually, they both were affiliated with Sante magazine.
Sure.
Which was an international magazine, sure. And sent me down there to meet them, and I started reviewing wines for them. And
so the Hemingway people made the intro for you to Sante.
Correct.
And you were able to get into Sante and start doing reviews and writing?
Reviews, writing, events in New York.
What year are we talking now?
Probably 2005, I'm guessing.
So that's when you really got to get out on the street.
Yeah, that's when I'd meet, you know, I'd get invited to a wine dinner in the city with a winemaker and, you know, at you know, great restaurants, and you'd sit down and be able to interview someone and then write a story on it. And then I suggested and wrote a couple of other stories for them. And then trips started happening where I'd travel around the world and taste things, meet people, get in-person experiences.
Your interest was what at that point, France or not necessarily?
Oh, no, it's way broader than that.
Italy, everything?
Yeah, everything.
Okay, so you got to travel to all the wine regions that, and you wrote about them.
I've been to many places, never been to California.
Really? You've never been to Napa or Sonoma?
Correct. I think that's bizarre. I've been to France eight or ten times.
Right.
I've been to Italy multiple times, Spain multiple times, Portugal three or four times, but never to California.
Now, at this point, it's almost like a novelty thing. I mean, aren't you curious, or it doesn't matter at this point?
Oh, no, I'm totally curious. And
so you got to get your butt out there.
I will at some point. It just hasn't happened.
All right, so you wrote for Sante for how long?
Maybe 3 years.
And that's really where you got into traveled,
right?
The exposure to wine people,
right?
The events and all of
the
that.
Confidence of
did that really
the confidence
open
confidence of having your writing accepted and liked? That was,
right.
That was actually a big jump too.
And figuring out what it takes to have it liked and published and all of that.
Yep.
Were you judging competitions? I mean, did it lead to stuff like that?
I haven't done any judging yet. I get invited to judge something in the city, but it's always on Thursdays, and that's a bad night for
really?
Me.
Really?
That's a travel night often.
Okay.
But I was just invited to judge a beer, cider, and sake event next Saturday.
Three very hot things.
Yeah.
Sake is very hot.
Yeah.
Beer probably because of the craft part.
Yeah,
is the lager,
but
cider is like on another thing right now.
Right.
Do you blog?
Yeah.
Regularly?
Whatever I do a regular column for WAG magazine.
Okay, let's talk about that. So you contribute to WAG.
I'm their wine and spirits guy.
So first, tell everyone what WAG is.
It's a upscale lifestyle magazine based in White Plains, New York. Distributed in Fairfield and Westchester.
So it's northern New York.
Yeah,
Westchester, Southern Connecticut.
I've seen some distribution into the city as well.
Now, you said a magazine. Is it out there in paper, or is it online, or both?
Both.
It is both. Okay.
Both. I used to get it delivered in my New York Times.
Okay.
Once a month, it would be curled up in the Times.
So tell me again, you're the wine guy, your official
wine
title?
Wine and Spirits.
Wine and Spirits.
That's my official title.
Okay. And how often is your stuff featured? Weekly, monthly? It's a monthly thing?
Yeah, and sometimes I do other things with them. I wrote a story, covered and wrote a story as media for the World Cup women's ski event at Killington last Thanksgiving, which was wonderful.
Nice.
And got a feature story on that. And then I just got back from Nova Scotia, Cape Breton Island, for Celtic Colors, which is the greatest musical festival you've never heard of.
How does that apply to wine?
It doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Good for you Good for you for sneaking that one by, right?
They have wineries up there, but there's no connection, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for WAG, are you thinking about things for the next few months, next year? You meet somebody and say, this could be a good story. What's your inspiration for, columns and all of that?
Well, sometimes I'll meet someone and I'll go, oh, this is a great story. This will write itself. This will be easy. And other times I reach deadline and I'm going,
you got nothing.
What's fresh in my head?
Really?
Okay, I'll write about that.
Really?
So it's all over the place.
All right, and you are also so WAG. If the listeners wanted to look at WAG,
wagmag.com.
WAGMAG.com. One word across.
It's all there.
Okay,
and
WAGMAG.
And it's way more than just my content. It's
Like Doug said, it's a lifestyle magazine serving this area. You are also an author, and are you giving me that?
We can give this to you.
You in front of me is the wine tasting journal. It's a wine logbook. Tell me when you wrote this. Tell me what it's about, and where people can get it. It's a wine tasting journal, a logbook to rate, record, and remember wines by Doug Paulding. Why did you do this?
I have some family members. I have a lot of family members. There's eight of us. And
okay.
We all drink wine with the exception of one. And
teetotaler.
Drink a fair amount of wine. And there are some that pay attention to it, and there are some that don't. I find that people drink wines, but they don't taste it. They don't think about it so much. So this book is trying to get people to actually think about it and taste
it. Stop and think and taste.
And I designed a review page in it. The book is mostly review pages, empty review pages, but with little 1 to 10 checkoffs, circles, and then a place to put down your thoughts of the wine briefly, and then recommend it or not. So you can, you know, write what the wine is, and then go through it, review it really fast, 2 minutes. You don't have to spend an evening getting deep with this. You just write it, and then you have the thing, the recommend it or not. And then when you go in, if you take that with you to a wine store and you have a few wines that you've written up, the wine store or the restaurant owner or somm has a much higher likelihood of matching
right.
you up with a wine that you will like.
I agree with that, because a good somm or a guy at a good wine store will ask you, you know, what do you like, heavy, light,
what do you love? But like, I know people that will say, I don't like Chilean wines, or I don't like, for no reason other than they might have had a bad one.
Hey, Doug, good to see you. I was at a restaurant last week. I meant to tell you, I had the most amazing wine. What was it? Forgot.
Right.
You want to, like, smack that guy, right?
Right, right.
So there's a template in this book, you know, where everything's laid out for you, and you know, what Doug has done is he's provoking you to think about the wine, and like he said, taste it. And he's forcing you to think about it and record some information, which if you care about wine or, you know, kind of want to advance, you know, your drinking and understanding, this book will help you do that. So it's called The Wine Tasting Journal, a logbook to rate, record, and remember wines. When did you publish this?
I wrote it last summer, and it was published. We were trying to hit
recently.
Christmas, but we just missed Christmas. I think it came out
okay, so
January sometime.
It's timeless in the sense that you could push it for this Christmas.
Right.
Where can people find this?
Amazon and Barnes & Noble online.
Bookstores and Amazon. Best play is Amazon.
Easy to get there. There's one other thing that's in here that a lot of people, when they're trying to review wines, kind of get stuck. They don't remember. They can smell something, but they go, I don't know. I can't put a word to that. And we got permission from Ann Noble, who was at UC Davis, and she put together this very good aroma wheel where you start with the broad flavors in the center of the circle, and then you work your way out to get more refined descriptors.
So in
the
first dozen
the
pages, there's an aroma wheel with all the descriptors, and it's broken down. I think a lot of people have an idea of what they're smelling and tasting. They have problems describing it.
Right.
And if you could put this in front of them,
right.
Yeah, raspberries, or
right.
Yeah, peach,
right.
Or lemongrass, or lemon citrus, or whatever.
Right.
So it's called the wine aroma wheel. That's a great thing.
And then I was having a glass of wine with a friend a while ago, and he's tasting it, and it was a really good bottle that I opened, and you know, I started describing what I was getting, and he's like, "This is too complicated. Can I just say if I like it or not?" And I said, "Yeah, you can, but you're not likely to get that experience again just by saying that I like it."
Yeah, I agree with that, and this stimulates people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's The Wine Tasting Journal by Doug Paulding, available on Amazon. All right, tell me a couple more things. We're here in Norwalk, which is really southern Connecticut, you know, Greenwich to Stamford to Norwalk and, you know, north. Plus you have northern Westchester. Tell me about the wine scene up here. Is there a wine scene? I mean, restaurants like Rob's Place. Are there wine bars? Are the retailers?
Washington Prime is great.
But can you walk into a retailer where you live up here and find the stuff that you want?
I get a lot of stuff sent to me for samples, so
okay.
I don't have to do a lot of shopping in general. I shop generally when I have to write a story.
Okay.
And I don't have the things that I'm writing about, so I have to go pick them up to, you know, have a firsthand talk about it.
But a good market?
Total Wine is crazy. It's like a, it's like the Costco of wines and beers and
spirits. Costco is the Costco of wine.
Yeah, not so much. They have great prices. They have some great wines, but they don't have a broad spectrum.
I think Total Wine is a little more focused.
Yeah, well, it's just way more. You know, they probably have 400 scotches in there.
Right.
And you're never going to find that at Costco.
So this Norwalk Now Crush thing is, you know, a great opportunity to expose people to wine and events. Are there things going on during the course of the year, or those are limited?
Events?
Yeah.
Oh.
Always stuff.
Lots of stuff.
Because I would think this is a big wine market, a big collector market, a big restaurant market, right?
You're talking about like food, like wine and food festivals, that sort of thing?
Yeah, up here.
There was a Greenwich one in...
Okay, Greenwich is a neighboring
end of
town.
September.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty special. And then, who's that guy? McGraw, Tim McGraw headlined a concert.
The country singer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was the only person there that didn't know every word to every song. And I didn't know any word to any song. So.
You and me, if I was there. That's okay. Things are happening up here. I mean, more restaurants are serving more wines. There's more events. I would guess the retailers are. It's a pretty discerning market up here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people, bedroom community to New York, a lot of people, you know, are wine collectors as it is. All right. So, Doug, time to subject you to our wine list. I want to ask you 5 questions, and I want you to buzz through them and give me your best answers. You don't have to dwell on them. And the first question we ask everyone is, what are you drinking now? Is there anything you're trying, tasting, loving, specific, different than normal?
No, it tends to be what shows up on my doorstep or...
So what's on the doorstep now? Fair question.
I'm blanking on that one.
It's okay. Let's think about it. French, Italian? I mean, what are the last things you've been drinking?
It was a Languedoc, a Roussillon wine, actually.
Okay. Very cool region.
Michel Chapoutier.
Chapoutier, one of the great makers.
Ila Boat.
Chapoutier started making wines in the Languedoc Roussillon, right?
Right.
Because he's generally a Rhonist, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that's good.
That,
different.
And then I had dinner with Michel Roland the other night, and he's got a wine called Clos de la Siete. He's got a few partners that are contributing grapes.
Say it again. Clos, C-L-O-S?
C-L-O-S-D-E la
de.
Siete.
Which is
S-I-E-T-E.
Seven. S-I-E-T-E.
Right, right.
And from where?
It's from Argentina.
Okay.
And it's
what's the grape?
Malbec dominant,
blended,
but cab. Yeah, it's kind of a Cabernet, a Bordeaux blend. That he's overseeing.
I'm gonna post that.
And it's fantastic. And it's imported by the Deutsch family, and
William Deutsch
and
great
Peter Deutsch.
Old-timer.
Peter Deutsch was at the dinner as well, and he said, "Find me a bottle under $20. This good can't be done." And
is that the price point?
Under $20. You can actually get it for $18 if you buy a case.
That may be the answer to our last question.
If you get a case, you can get it for $16.
Right. You get the case discount.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good one. Favorite wine and food pairing? Something that you keep returning to? Something that gives you that ah factor?
No.
You don't have?
No, I don't, because I don't eat meat. I eat fish, cheese, eggs, but I don't eat generally.
Do you
animals.
Eat meat, but very
so,
little, or you don't
no,
eat
I don't
meat?
Eat it.
Okay.
Haven't eaten not since college.
Okay.
So oftentimes, what everybody puts together for a pairing doesn't work
okay.
for me anyway. I had this experience with at a wine dinner with a winemaker at Le Cirque, and he had a funny thing. What he did was he basically picked up his plate and picked up his glass of wine and went. Smelled both, went, yep, that works.
And okay. There's really no rules.
Appealed to him, that was his
I mean, I, you know, I have a library. I document everything, you know, of almost 100 shows of pairings. You know, some of them will just, you know, drive you crazy, and some are very typical. But that's fine. All right. In this area or anywhere in general, you have a favorite wine restaurant and or bar that you really look at as a great wine place, selection, knowledge?
I love Bernard's Inn at Ridgefield.
Okay, Ridgefield, Connecticut, Bernard's.
Yeah. Great wine list. They have everything from first growths and the Domaine de Romanée Contis, and they have top tier stuff, and then they have everything down to, you know, a special list where you can buy things for 15, 20
bucks. So he's the guy that shows the top tier stuff as well as anyone around.
Yeah, he's been collecting for
a long time.
I've been in his cellar. It's impressive.
Nice.
And of course, Crabtree's Kittle House.
In Westchester.
Is legendary.
And of course, Washington Prime.
Of course.
We're sitting in front of all his wine. All right, do you have a favorite all-time wine? And again, not the most expensive, not the most rare, but something that is just memorable to you.
I do. It was a... who makes Inglenook?
Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, it was a Rubicon. It was probably
80s.
It was probably 86.
Okay.
And I opened it for a dinner party, and it was no good. I tasted it and just pushed it aside. And then I tried it about a half an hour later.
It opened up.
It was epic. It completely changed, and it was. I'll never forget it. It's just a wine experience I'll never forget. I almost just upended
it
in the sink.
So it just needed a little air.
And I just put it aside, and I tried it again, and I have a couple in my cellar that I'm just for, not that year.
Because I know 87 was a killer year in Napa, but I assume 86 was pretty good, because 88 and 89 were not great. So that's a great answer, first time. Tell me, guide my listeners. They're going to go out and buy wines, and we may have addressed this. What's a good wine to buy around for 15, 20 bucks retail? Give me a red and a white from your tasting, your experience, shopping, just all that. Like I said, you can give me a grape, a region, a maker, all of the above.
Mm-hmm. I like to go to Costco for
that price
multiple
range.
Shopping, multiple okay. types, you know, whatever I need. But their wine selection is pretty outstanding, especially if you don't get the entry-level stuff. You bump it up to the $12 to $20 range, and I think you're going to get a wine that drinks like a $50 bottle.
Give me an example or two.
There is a Sonoma Chardonnay. It's more than that, though. Russian River Valley.
Okay.
That's great. It's a Chardonnay that's wonderful, and I think it's $12.
You're going to email me that, and at some point I'm going to put it on our social media. That's a white. How about a red?
Napa blend.
Okay.
A Napa blend.
Or did you say Franciscan?
They'll actually print the name of the winemaker on the back of the bottle for the better wines. By better, I mean $15.
Right.
And so you can look at that, and you can go on your phone.
15 gets Google you out of that 8, 9, 10, 12, where it's okay.
Right.
You get to where they start naming the winemaker and all
but
that.
But you can see where this winemaker works.
And
they, you know, Costco somehow did something with them to bring it to market. And it's you know, no name, more or less, but really solid drinking wines.
Those are great choices, and we will post them on our social media. Doug, we're going to wrap this up.
One more thing I'd like to say.
Please.
Is that when you're in the store and you're looking at those wines, every additional $5 that you spend for a bottle you're going to get rewarded $10, $15.
So don't be afraid. Price doesn't always mean they're just gouging you. You know,
these makers, the producers, they want to get these things as on the market.
Pay
a little more money and you get a big payoff.
I agree with that. And it's sort of been documented that there are price breaks where the wines, you know, just get better and better. That is a good recommendation. Doug Paulding, I want to thank you for joining us at Norwalk Now. Our Crush event, our global wine dinner at Washington Prime. You've been listening to Doug Paulding on the Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network.